We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day. Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. And today we are going to preview the Lakers' play-in game against the Golden State Warriors. What a match made in Adam Silver's heaven, at the very least, between LeBron and Steph matchup in the inaugural. I guess it's not the inaugural. You had it last year as well, but over the course of a more normal NBA season, you get this matchup between LeBron and Steph, a couple of teams with champions on them. And we discussed that a bit in the last pod about how confident we feel. Today, we're going to get more into the nitty gritty. And the most obvious advantage for all of my angst and worries in the last pod: if the Lakers and Warriors were to play 100 times, I think the Lakers would win a lot of those games. This is not the circumstance.
Say a number, Pete. Say a number, game. Pete. How many?
Yeah, see, I caught myself before. I was like, oh, yeah, it's going to get snipped. It's going to get snipped.
Fair enough. Don't say a number.
We're so much bigger than they are. And when we played them three times this season. We blew them out twice, and then we blew a blowout-sized lead, and they caught us from behind on Martin Luther King Day, if I remember correctly. And so in that game up in Oakland, or I guess not Oakland anymore, but up in the Bay, we had like 14 dunks against them. They really struggle with our size, Darius. And trying to look at this from a Warriors perspective, what can they do? They don't have Wiseman. Oubre's still out, so that knocks off some size on the wing. They're very small relative to our roster. What can they do to try to neutralize that? And what ways can we really look to exploit that?
I mean, neutralizing it is going to be tough, man. They're going to have to play fast. They're going to have to sort of speed the Lakers up and try to get the Lakers into quick decision-making mode, where they will then make mistakes, right? And so, like, David versus Goliath, right? Like, oh, well, you're big. Well, we're fast, right? I don't know if you guys caught Draymond's colorful post-game after they clinched the eighth seed against the Grizzlies, but he basically said, like, they've been trying that center shit against us for years, and it ain't worked yet. And to a certain extent, he's right. It hasn't worked yet. Now, he has not played Anthony Davis, and I don't think these Warriors have seen a center trio that's going to be as talented and as versatile as the centers that the Lakers can throw at them. And it's going to be tricky for them. Mike, you've been confident about this team. I think that you expressed confidence.
Realistic.
In the last pod. Well, look, confidence is born out of realism, right? Like if there are people who are irrationally confident, and I didn't say that about you, I did not throw the irrational in front of that. Like, so confidence is based in a certain amount of truth. We always talk about like, oh, NBA players are like, this guy is arrogant. Well, yeah, guess what? He's one of the top, you know, like 1% of the 1%, right? Like these guys are elite. And so, of course, they're going to be confident about how good they are. When you look at the Lakers, I think there's a lot of reasons to be confident in them in general. But I think that specifically about this matchup, you probably have a fair amount of realism-based confidence about why things tilt in the Lakers' favor. And so does it start with the bigs, or does it start with LeBron? Does it start with AD? Like, I know where it starts for me, but where does it start for you?
Yeah, the interesting part of the Laker blowouts this year against Golden State is that AD didn't play. He didn't play in the March game or the February game, in which, you know, these games weren't even close. Trez went completely nuts against the second unit in the 128-97 game. He was 11 for 14 from the field. He was plus 16. He was dunking everything. And, you know, this was not, Wiseman, I think, played 28 minutes off the bench and just really struggled. So they've taken that out of their system. And then the other game, it wasn't all Trez, but it was just a forceful game. Like LeBron kind of led the way. And I think, so the easy answer is LeBron, though. Like LeBron is still the guy that is good as Draymond is defensively. And, you know, LeBron is the guy that at that position on the wing can get into the paint and take AD aside. Like, of course, AD is another guy that can give Draymond problems in other ways. But the Lakers have two guys, right? Like, think back to that Cleveland team. Kevin Love wasn't going to give Draymond problems. You know, Kyrie, you know, to an extent, like Kyrie can get his shot off against anybody, but he wasn't in a physical, forceful way able to sort of punish what Golden State does so well. What Draymond rightfully had some of that bravado against Memphis, trying to play the big boy game with Valanciunas, who's been really good. And they just, what they did there, they just sagged way off of Ja, and they said, if you hit a bunch of threes, so be it. And that's really how they won that matchup. You can't do that against anybody in the Lakers. Even Caruso, you know, Caruso, if he were the start, like Caruso is 40%. On the season from three, and he'll bang some three. He'll, like, if you leave him wide open like that, he'll hit some. Shooter, you can't leave Shooter. Just completely ignore him, because not only that, if you leave him in that situation, he can also just get to the rim in a second if you're playing off him and you give him a runway. So I don't see, Darius, how, like, I don't have a game plan. If I'm Steve Kerr, I don't know how to deal with the Lakers' mix of size and speed. It's not just the size. It's the fact that the size is fast. The size is quick. The size rotates. And that's, to me, where the confidence comes in this matchup. And you're almost just like hoping that Steph hits 12 threes. And even if that's the case, right? If Steph's going to hit 12 threes, he's going to have to take 25 of them. Right. And that means they're not really getting much else generated towards the basket. And if you don't generate stuff towards the basket against the Lakers, you don't have a good chance to win.
One thing, I'm going to flip it to the other side of the ball on why I think they have difficulty defending us, even though Golden State's a pretty good defensive team.
They are.
Is the way that we leveraged our size against them from watching the tape of those three games was way more off of dribble penetration than it was in the post. Now, a big part of that is because AD didn't play in two of those games, like you said. But we're more physical than they are on our perimeter attacks, which gets us into the paint and collapses a defense. Like, the way that you beat a much bigger team is, again, that David and Goliath type of thing where you have to swirl around them and you have to kind of take down the giant with this attack of speed that makes their head spin. I think Golden State is more capable, Steph in particular, is more capable of that on the offensive end. The Steph versus Drummond matchup concerns me a little bit, and it's part of the reason why I think you get Drummond pressing up on the ball, because Steph is so good at getting himself open off of the ball that And Drummond can be a quarter to a half beat slow on that. And so if there are catch hedges or switches or circumstances where Drummond ends up on Steph, that's a concerning moment and we'll need to address that. But on the offensive side of the ball, it was really striking to me, Darius, about how we used a lot of dribble penetration rather than post play. Because that's a lot of times the first place your mind goes is, oh, we're way bigger than them. Why don't we just post them up? But that's not how it really worked out. It was against beating switches in isolation. And when they had Looney or Wiseman in a drop or not in a switch coverage, really, we kicked their butts on ball screens as well. So that was interesting to me from the tape.
That's what the Lakers do. They're going to try to get downhill on you. That's why Schroeder's important. It's why a healthy LeBron is important. I think if you're looking at the Warriors, their sort of path towards holding up defensively is, all right, well, we're going to put Draymond on Anthony Davis. Draymond's one of the best defensive players in the world. We're going to put Andrew Wiggins on LeBron James. And Wiggins had a very good defensive year. And we're going to hope that those guys can hold up.
And that's exactly the reason why I don't think we should be posting up a ton in this game. If we've got LeBron or if we've got AD posting up on Draymond, he's going to win some of those. But we've got so many better options, I think.
Yeah, I think the Lakers need to go into more screen and roll stuff. I think they need to involve Steph in screen and rolls. I think they need to set screens with Steph's guy. Okay, Steph, you're going to defend KCP, right? Because they're probably not going to put him on Schroeder.
And KCP's good chance KCP's guarding him, so there won't be a cross match either.
Plus, Darius, Caruso's perfect for this too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because when he checks in, that's who Steph's going to guard as the theoretical, you know, not as big of a threat. And Caruso is great at knowing exactly when to set screens. LeBron knows how to do it with LeBron, right? Like that to me is something you absolutely hammer.
Well, also too, can the Lakers target Steph in ways defensively that make him work hard defensively?
Is that for like a take out his legs for the offensive end, or what's the goal of targeting him specifically?
Targeting him to make him a little bit more tired, because Steph is going to run around a lot. But yes, take away his legs and just make him work. Let's expend as much mental energy and physical energy as much as you can in a single game. And if it shows up in him going, I don't know, 5 for 16 or 6 for 16 from three instead of 10 or 11 for 16, which he's more than capable of doing, then you've helped yourself there. Like some of the things that I could imagine the Lakers doing as well is, okay, you're going to switch off ball actions. Well, how easily are you going to give up the switch? Are you going to end up, can the Lakers end up getting Steph in a matchup with Dennis? And then basically, and then Bron comes in, screens Steph. How many screens can you run Steph off of? How many, like, okay, you're going to guard KCP. Well, guess what? We're going to go to our elbow series and you're going to have to run off of a double and then a handoff in order to stay connected to KCP. How much can you target him? How much can you wear him down? How much can you get into his body when, not when you're guarding him, because he uses that against you in such good ways. He is such a good offensive player that he cannot be beat up when he's on offense. He's too good. You have to beat him up when he is defending.
It's a really good point. Yeah.
The Lakers are equipped to do that. They have physicality a certain amount of physicality and athleticism in their backcourt. They have a ton of physicality in their frontcourt. And so screen him, get him, run him off of staggers, get him switched onto LeBron into the post, get him so that he has to basically defend cross screen actions. Maybe you're talking about, oh, don't post up AD. Well, how about let's run some cross screen actions where KCP is the guy who's going to screen for Anthony Davis some. And now Steph has to be the one who takes that first bump in order to sort of dislodge AD coming across the lane. And then when he takes that first bump, then you run KCP off of another Drummond screen coming up to the top. And now AD is right. And so there's a bunch of X's and O's stuff that you can do in order to try to target him defensively just to get him working a little bit more.
Really good points. But I think that you also, while everything you said about his offense is true, you also have Caruso and Schroeder, I probably should have started with Schroeder and KCP, to absolutely attack him and harass him on that side of the court too. Like it's a full, and it's one game you got to do it for, right? And if you win that one game, you get until Sunday, most likely, off. And like to me, there's got to be a part of, like, Steph's obviously one of the smarter players that you got going in the league. There's got to be a part of him that if the Lakers come out right from the jump in that first quarter and just blitz attack him on both sides of the court in Staples, right? Crowd's bigger than it has been. Guys are flying around. There's got to be part of him that you say, that he's saying, yo, I can get Memphis again, or maybe yeah. San Antonio back in, or back, I was going to say Oracle, right? Back in San Fran. So there's, I think that you got to plant that early seed. Like, this is going to be a long day for you, Steph. If some of your guys are going to come along for the party, like, okay. But I was just pulling up, you know, the last month of the Warriors, basically. Steph's averaging 37 points on 45% from the field, 40% from three on 17 three-point attempts.
He's making a bad man.
Six. Okay. Yes, but he's been working. He's got to be tired. Like 17 threes a night?
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. Their second leading scorer, Wiggins, has actually been playing pretty well. Okay. Yeah. And then their third is Jordan Poole, like Eric Paschal, Michael Mulder. Those are their next three. You know, these are not guys to be feared. They're just not. And that doesn't mean you don't respect them, but like you're not going into that. You're giving them full respect, but like this is going to be a defense that I think that Vogel can craft, and that LeBron and Dudley and the whole crew can have an expertise in. And like, I think the three of us are almost getting excited thinking about all the ways the Lakers can deploy this defense. I don't think the Warriors are sitting in, I don't think Steve Kerr is like psyched trying to figure out how to prep a game plan for the Lakers. It's got to be a little bit more ominous, I guess, sure, is my point. And hopefully that doesn't sound cocky. I just think it's realistic to look at the rosters and think Golden State belongs where they are at the eight. The Lakers probably should be the one seed if they stayed healthy, you know, at worst the two, like, but I, you know, probably right there. And that's like, you know, this is more of a, it should be, it's more of a 1-8 matchup to me than it is a 7-8 matchup. Mm-hmm. Rhythm be damned.
And it's so interesting. The psychological aspect of this is almost like a 3-2 series where both teams are up 3-2.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Because neither team, regardless of what happens, you can live to fight another day. And I think that attacking Steph in particular on that front end, I think that's a great point that you make, that we're going to make this a very long day for you. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get into the different ways of defending Steph and the nitty gritty of that, because the Lakers, as you guys have said, have a lot of weapons to be able to deploy in that respect. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily Instant Karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in Instant Karma to 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll be automatically entered to win $1 million. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated, member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. So the first guy I think of in terms of defending Steph is KCP. KCP is one of the better lock and trail defenders in the NBA. And if you're not familiar with what that means, it's a technique for defending a shooter that's coming off of an off-ball screen, right? So Steph doesn't have the ball in his hands. He's standing in the corner and they got the ball in Draymond's hands at the top of the key. And they're setting a down screen for Steph and he's running off of it. KCP is really good at staying attached. And he's also very fast. And so all of the and can change direction quickly defensively. And so a lot of what Steph is great at is losing his defender in those types of situations, either with speed or even more so. He is the most, I would argue that Steph is up there with Kobe. And there's no higher compliment that I could give to a player in terms of technical expertise. It's in different ways because Kobe was more of a triple threat type of player. But in terms of mastering his craft and technique, Steph's ability to get open, understanding footwork and the arm fighting, all of the different elements of that, he's as good as there's ever been. But KCP has some of the attributes to be able to limit that. So I guess we'll start there, D, is chasing Steph off of screens. We got KCP in that lock and trail, but you've also got Caruso and Dennis will play a factor, but also our bigs as well. What's our approach as we go toward that?
Well, it's funny, Pete, because you say the first person you think of when defending Steph is KCP, and the first person I think of is Anthony Davis.
Yeah, the bigs are important. Yeah,
and then I think of Andre Drummond, and then I think of Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell, and because the lock and trail guy has an important job, right? But when you lock and you trail, the second word of that is trail. So you are behind the play. And if it was only your job to stop this one player, you would not be locking and trailing.
That's right.
Right? You lock
you
and trail.
Yes,
you need help. The essence of that defense is that there is help coming, and this is why Golden State and Steph in particular is so, why he's such a tricky matchup, is because he understands what his gravity as a shooter is, and he understands how to leverage the coverages that he sees against you. He knows that when he's coming off of a screen, that there are catch hedges that he's going to see almost every single time. So your bigs especially, have to play up to touch at the level of the ball, right? And so when I say up to touch, it's that they can touch the screen and they can touch the ball handler.
They're not giving any space to the offense.
There is no space. They are up to engage. There is a dance. There's a defensive partnership that you have to have with the guy who is locking and trailing. And you need to show and be in position in order to challenge if you have to, but be low enough to slide if you have to stay with the ball. And then you have to be able to drop your hips and get back to your own man if that guy is opening up and then closing. You do not guard Steph with one player. You do not guard Steph with two players, because there needs to be weak side help then that is funneling. The thing that the Warriors are some of the best in the league at, and it's because of Steph and it's because of his partnership with Draymond Green, is they are the kings of playing 4-on-3 on the backside. And one of the things that the Lakers have been excellent at with Vogel and with Anthony Davis and LeBron James is turning your 4-on-3s back into 4-on-4s.
This is important because the 4-on-3s are what result from playing up to touch, as Darius was saying, right? So that means Anthony Davis or Andre Drummond, they're right up on that three-point line, because you don't want Steph to step into a jumper while KCP is trailing him. And what happens is Draymond will slip out of that. You make that short roll pass to Draymond, and now it's Draymond in a 4-on-3 where he's one of the all-time greats.
He is so good, Mike, at spraying the ball all over the court. And then on top of that, if you then think that I did my job as KCP, Steph did not get the damn ball. I locked and trailed. My guys were there. But guess what? Steph is relocating.
You have to pay attention the whole time.
Yeah, he gets to the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. If your attention drops, he's gone. He's wide open in the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I loved where you started, Darius, here in Pete started with the lock and trail on KCP, and then you brought it around and mentioned the bigs in AD, and that is what makes the Lakers great on defense. They are complete. They give you both, right? They pressure the perimeter into the fact that Frank Vogel's primary belief remains protect the rim, and this is what they did against Portland. They made Dame. They basically refused to let him have a look at a three. They let him get into that middle area, and there was always somebody waiting for him. And that somebody was always big and long and quick. And then they did the same thing against James Harden. And they said, Russell Westbrook, go ahead. Do you. And what's different about the Warriors now, they don't have Klay Thompson. So when that, to me, he was so incredibly – he's not underrated, because I think everybody recognized how great he was. But when you have a dead-eye 6'7 wing – who can get a three off in a second, and everyone in the court, everyone in the building thinks it's going in, it just changes the equation of how much you can help stuff, how much you can get to the rim, how much you can protect it. And, you know, now that guy is like, it's either Kent Bazemore or Jordan Poole, right? And then,
or Andrew Wiggins.
Or Wiggins. And even though, you know, Wiggins has done that a little better, but then.
Yeah, I want to talk Wiggins a little bit later.
Yeah, we should get into that. But then, but he's not Klay Thompson. And then Klay's also going to be able to defend your best wing on the other end. And so but let's just stick to the offensive part of this for a second. And Pete, to kind of throw the question back at you a little bit, could you speak to the Lakers' backside of the defense and how Drummond plays into that? How Anthony Davis is able to take two things away at once, seemingly, right? This is the Davis where he's at the rim protecting against Jokic, and then he blocks Campazzo shot. Like that is the ultimate destroyer to me of this of a team that thinks they can get an advantage out there. So how does the rim protection and Vogel's system and AD, and whether he's the five or if Drummond's in, how does that all play into this matchup specifically?
Yeah, AD is particularly effective at this because he can show high and then get back to Looney on the roll. Because what happens on those off-ball screens is, you know, KCP is going to lock and trail. If you're screening with AD's man, in fact, I would argue that part of Kerr's game plan will very likely to be to get Drummond's man in that screen as often as possible. And not have AD do it at all, because AD can show high to the point where it dissuades Steph from taking that jumper and buying KCP enough time to get back out in front of Steph. And if Steph makes that pass down to Looney, he can get back down there to get a legit, not like a, oh, I hope I block this, but, oh, you're probably not going to make this shot. And that's what I, when I talk about shutting two things off at once or being in two places at once, that's what I mean is most players cannot show high and recover back at the rim on the same play, and AD can do that.
AD at his best dissuades both shots.
Yes.
He is good enough defensively where Looney doesn't take that shot or Draymond doesn't take that shot. And then suddenly you have to reset. And everything that you just did to try to get a shot off is now you have to do it again. Except now there's 8 seconds left on the shot clock instead of 18 seconds.
So that's not really the portion of the play that concerns me with Steph. It's the part that comes after that where, oh, we don't have anything and the ball swings and, you know, you turn your head for a second and then Steph is relocated for three. It's transition defense where we don't match up and we let Steph walk into a wing three, right? So if we're set and we're, okay, you're locking and trailing, I'm catch edging, and we know our roles and responsibilities, I think we're in great shape. It's more the periods of the game and the moments where things are broken down a little bit that Steph can take advantage.
So, Pete, this is, as you as always, is a little bit of a level of expectation for me. Like, Steph is going to hit five threes, period.
Yeah, of course. Period. Of course. It's right? About limiting it.
Yeah. So he, like, I promise you, he will hit, unless something super weird happens, which it has at Staples Center before, by the way, but, like, he is you cannot possibly stay with somebody that is that great at getting a shot off quickly, that knows the angles, that knows how to reset, that can rescreen. Like, he's going to get KCP backdoor a couple times. The whole point of this Lakers group, though, is that on the weak side are LeBron and AD, right? It's not random. It's not like your average defender. It's not, you know, for Memphis tonight, Jaren Jackson Jr. or Jonas Valanciunas, like, those guys are not equipped to really know how to handle Steph, especially on the weak side. LeBron and AD are. They just are. They are up for it, and they're going to be on the court a lot.
100%. We're going to win that battle, Mike. We're going to win that, at least relative to other teams. But to me, the difference between Steph hitting four threes and nine threes is the more scattered moments of the game where it's not a five-on-five against the same defense
sure.
type of
for moment. Sure. And what you said earlier about in the last spot, too, is that turnovers, right, are important there in kind of setting that stuff up, even though Golden State's going to cough up the ball a lot, too. But what I want to kind of throw to Darius with this part of the Steph equation, when you've got, like, if you've got a team that can at least take away the rim on Steph, that to me is where he really kills teams, is because you're so obsessed with him from the three-point line. And I'm just positing, I've seen it happen. I know the Lakers are going to be attentive to him at the three-point line. I know it. And where I think they get him, where I think they get Steph kind of in that, like, what time is that Grizzlies game on Sunday or the San Antonio, is they get him on the, I can't get to the rim, I can't finish. When Cleveland beat Golden State, every time Steph turned the corner, LeBron was waiting to go and pack him at the rim. Like, that was what, and so the Lakers, to me, they can take that away while still pressuring him from three, Darius, and that to me is the big key with Steph.
Yes, the bigger key is always going to be getting Steph inside the arc. Is, can you get him off of the line? One of the things that Steph is so good at is he leverages your want to get him off of the line in order to then still get back there. He back cuts or he drives, and he drives for layups. And then after he gets a layup or two, then he drives and kicks and relocates. He does this over and over and over again until, as a defense, you're broken. And I think what you're talking about, Mike, is as much as you can, right? You're never going to break Steph, but what you can do is get him into positions on the floor where you think you're going to win more times than you lose.
But just to quickly let me try to make my point a little bit more in a more concise manner. I'm actually okay with him living beyond the three-point line as long as they're all contested, as long as you're up on him. What I want to take away is him getting into the teeth of the paint with his great crafty finishes and like kicking out, kind of spewing that way. Like, I'd actually almost like to have him out there more, like As long as they're not open, as long as he's not resetting and rescreen, all that kind of stuff. That's what I'm trying to say. Like you have to take away the rim, I think, on him, and then Golden State can't get their period.
Yeah, see, I think it's trickier than that because I think of the game plan the Lakers used against Dame, which was basically like, we're going to funnel you to big players. But yeah,
this is the most similar game plan. Almost certainly will be the most similar game plan of any of the teams we played last year is the Portland game plan.
But you have to make a you have to be deliberate. Like you're making a choice. If you tell Steph, play beyond the arc, his gravity is too great out there, and he will still find ways to get to the paint and be effective.
Well, and he might hit 12 threes also, right? Like, and completely warp the game.
And he still might hit half of his threes, whatever number that is. My thing is saying, all right, we know you want to be out there. We know that you can also do this other thing. Dame can do that other thing too. But if we're prepping to get you to inside the restricted area, then we're going to set everything up in order to get you there and then keep you there. There's an incredible amount of discipline that you need to have in order to execute that sort of game plan. The biggest culprits there are the big men. It's why after the Portland series, Vogel's praise was to Anthony Davis and to the big players as much as it was to KCP and Alex Caruso and Rajon Rondo and Danny Green, because while the guards certainly had to do their job at the point of attack, it was the big guys who needed to accept the ball, stay with it on the drive, and then still be able to challenge at the rim. And then the guards needed to then say, okay, well, then now I still have to stay connected. I have to crash down on bigs. I need to disrupt passing lanes, et cetera, et cetera.
To that point, I think it's important that we give Drummond direction when it comes to Steph. And that direction in particular is to stay, just chase him off the line. If he blows by you, we've got you behind him. But what he does, and this is true of a lot of bigs, is he can close out short to guys in fear of getting beaten off of the dribble. And I could see Steph carving up that matchup from beyond the three-point arc and getting some of his preferred type of threes against Drummond in particular. And so to me, I want Drummond pressed up on Steph. And if he gets by you, we'll rotate behind you.
My fear with Drummond is that he is a bit handsy at the point of attack. And, and he is so low in his stance that I worry about his ability to sort of like get up to the point where he is actually pushing Steph off of the line, right? Because getting that low in the stance is so great when you are trying to basically dissuade the drive and take away the pass.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want him in that low stance. I want him pressed up, and that's in more of a stance. Like, you're going to get beat off the dribble, fine. What I don't want is Steph hitting you with one little shoulder fake or one little jab step and a sidestep, and now he's by himself for a three. Because that's what will happen. If Drummond's playing him for the drive, that's exactly what's going
to
happen.
And I think that with the whole Drummond situation, this gets to what I wanted to, a point I wanted to bring up. What is Frank Vogel's rotation going to be in this kind of a game? Because so he's going to play to win the game. That's what he's going to do. He said that's what he said post game, which means like everything's on the table. So in a typical matchup against Golden State, it would be Trez over Gasol, based on what we've seen, because they're small. They're small off the bench. Mm-hmm. That's the one where he wants Trez to attack. I don't know if it's a good Gasol does not want to be up, worrying about Steph. I don't think this is really a Gasol game. As much. It doesn't mean that he can't come in and play some and he couldn't help you in certain spots. But like, to me, this is ultimately an Anthony Davis at the five game. Like, this is a game where AD, LeBron, and then you pick your other three. It's Kuz, it's Caruso, it's KCP, it's Schroeder, and maybe even Wes Matthews, right? He's the kind of guy who I would trust in this kind of a matchup. And that's about it. I don't know if you need THT too much. I don't know. I know that you don't need McLemore in that kind of a setting. And I don't know if you need Keith, although he's a guy that could come in, right, and be fine and that kind of thing, since he can shoot and you trust his defensive rotations when he's locked in. So like that to me is going to be interesting. But I guess the way what I want to put back to you guys is that if you were just making a game plan, you had 2 days to do it. Wouldn't part of it be like, okay, Golden State, Looney's at the five, but really it's Draymond Small. Like, wouldn't you think this is a perfect AD at the five game to capitalize on all your defensive rotations? And then Pete, that's allowing for, you know, seeing what Drummond looks like, and maybe Drummond does punish them some, but you just don't want him to get, you know, you don't want Steph to go at him too much.
I do ultimately think that this is AD at the five. The one caveat to that is the, you know, Draymond versus AD. I think Draymond can neutralize, say, AD in the post to some degree. But by and large, yeah, I do think that, especially defensively, having AD at the five is really the coverall, because then that means that LeBron is probably at the four. You've got a lot more defensive versatility and speed and ability to cover the perimeter, which is what you really need to do against Steph more than anything. I do think it's a Mark series, though, or a Mark game, in that Mark has been particularly effective at defending on the perimeter this year in traps, in that he, when you have trap responsibility, you got two guys on the ball. I loved coaching traps. It was one of my favorite parts of coaching, because you can really get guys to believe, and you don't need to have a whole lot of talent to be able to do it if you just know this is the circumstance that I'm in and you don't get sped up, right?
Darius, I'm just thinking like Pete's watching film on some poor freshman point guard, right? He's coming up against them and he's like, I am going to ruin homie's life. This dude, kid is going to be crying. He's not going to want to go to school tomorrow. He's going to have to, his parents are going to have to drag him out of bed at like 10 a.m. because he got trapped like Kobe was the Mamba mentality itself was coming directly out of Pete's two best athletes, and they wanted to destroy.
See, there's some truth to that. I'm not going to lie. There wasn't as much tape as I would have liked, but that was ultimately the goal. Yes. But here's the thing. I didn't really have great athletes by and large. And that goes to Mark, right? Like, obviously, Mark's an NBA player, but relative to other perimeter defenders, he's not fast. He's not particularly agile. So why can Mark be a good perimeter defender against Steph, of all people, is that when you're trapping, it's about, like, don't get beat that way. One of the ways I would teach trapping, for example, is I would go out there and do it as a relatively short guy. It wasn't nearly as athletic as my players, and show you, like, hey, I can not let you, who's much more athletic than I am, beat me this way. Like, you can beat me the other direction, but that's the other guy's responsibility, right? And so Mark is really good at that. Mark is disciplined defensively. Mark does his job. If you say, Mark, do not get beat along the sideline on this. If you funnel him back toward the middle, your guard's got you. That's the point of this trap. Mark will not get beat toward the sideline. If that is what the defensive, he will do it right every time. And then in that scramble of, okay, Steph has passed it out of this trap, and now we're into that 4-on-3. How do we make it a 4-on-4 again, and then a 5-on-5 again, like Darius was saying earlier? You've got to make your correct rotations. You've got to go to the right guy. This is Trez's biggest weakness in the non, like, interior defense parts of the defensive end, is that a lot of times he'll be like, oh, wing. Oh, crap. No, it's supposed to be the corner. And then that one step in the NBA is the difference between being open and not. And so Mark making that correct rotation back to who he needs to go to every time is super valuable. And that's why I think Trez's minutes are alongside AD. I think that's the place to, I think we need to have a defensive presence on the interior, because Wiggins is a guy that worries me a little bit, in that we've had some issues against wings that have the ability to go over the top of us. He's really good at crashing weak side boards. He played his ass off in that Memphis game. He was playing really hard, got some offensive boards, getting hustle plays. He's the type of athlete that can hang with us. This is what I've always said about this version of the Lakers, is that you got to be able to go through us. You got to be able to go toe to toe with us athletically and dunk on us every once in a while. Those are the types of guys that can have success against us. And Wiggins is one of those players. So sorry, D, I took that in a bunch of different directions, but wherever you want to go with that.
No, I think Mark can be super important, both offensively and defensively.
defensively, one of the things that I just wanted to say about Mark is that he's just so good with angles and he's so smart. And when you understand angles and you're smart, then you can do some things defensively. And that's to say nothing of like how good his hands are and just what his instincts are and everything else. I do think Trez can be like a punishing player on the interior, but I wonder how much that's going to matter if Draymond Green plays 40 or 42 minutes. And if this is a close game, his minute load is likely to be up there. Steph played 40 minutes against Memphis in what was basically a must-win game for them. They didn't want to fall into the play-in and be a potentially one game and you're out situation or have to win twice in order to make the postseason at all. If both those guys are going to be 40-minute plus type of guys and Wiggins is likely to be up there too, then maybe the usefulness of Trez in those matchups isn't quite the same, right? And maybe you're fine, Mike. I like your idea of playing AD at the five more. Put Braun at the four. And then, look, play Caruso, Dennis, and KCP. Yep. That's been one of the Lakers' best lineups all season.
That lineup probably does really well against Golden State.
Those guys are going
West,
to...
And West, yeah.
Yeah, and West. Mm-hmm. Like, look, those are the guys who are going to understand the rotations. They're athletic enough to be able to chase. They're athletic enough to be able to chase and then recover and then close out again and then chase again and then are going to compete on the backboards. There's a baseline level of fundamentals, smarts, and athleticism that the Lakers are going to need to have on the floor at all times. One of the things that I'm looking for is, okay, can you make it so that you are basically making Draymond split the difference between AD and LeBron? And then when it comes to Steph, you're throwing body after body at him. Because that is basically the formula. And Wiggins is going to have to show that he's ready to play in a game at this level for sure. Against LeBron James.
I'm thinking back to, but I guess really the Martin Luther King Jr. game. And like just there was a point in that fourth quarter where the Lakers just weren't expecting Draymond to score. And he actually did it a couple times. And so I think that's the thing that they have to be a little bit aware of. Like Draymond is going to could go up a level.
Oh, he did that in the Memphis game. Yeah. He scored like 8 points in the first quarter and a half
Right. So he's got that there. And I think that this is where having these 2 days and like tomorrow's an off day, but a lot of the guys are going to go in. They're going to work. Like LeBron's going to go in. He's going to get work. They're already going to be watching film. And then the whole team film is going to have a detailed film breakdown on Tuesday. Then they'll do it again Wednesday morning. And so like they'll know what is going to happen going into this game. So that to me is where the Lakers really kind of flexed their mental muscles last season. They always had a good plan. They had a good plan against Portland. It worked. They had a good plan against Houston. It worked. They had a good plan against Denver.
But they lost game one against both of those first two teams, right? They're going to have to be able to have that. They're going to have to execute the best plan right away against them.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, they do. So LeBron touched on this a little bit, Pete, in that they did. They like to use in a 7-game series. They use game one as a feel-out game. But like, but that's my point. So they know that they just have this one game. So the good plan is going to come for game one. And I think that like they had the plan, but then like that's a little bit to me more of a LeBron thing than anything where like, all right, let's see what this team's going to throw at us. And the plan for Portland was the same for game one. They just couldn't hit a shot. Like the defensive game plan worked from game one. The Houston game one was sort of a weird game, but we digress. This Golden State game, I think still though, it to go back to where you started it, Pete, it comes down to force and size and sort of athleticism without a lack of smarts. And I don't think Golden State has the horses. That's ultimately what it comes down to. If they had some advantage, rest advantage or a health advantage, or like they may have a rhythm advantage, but I don't think that's enough.
Yeah, that's the one.
They've got a rhythm advantage, but I don't think that's enough to overcome all of the other advantages that the Lakers have.
I ultimately think you're right about that. And that's why turnovers are going to be the biggest thing for me, is that how often we turn the ball over and in a broader sense commit unforced errors, which we are prone to do at times, even when we're at our best. We are going to have to make mistakes for Golden State to beat us. And if we play meat and potatoes, play good defense, pay attention to Steph, do your job, fill your role, the discrepancy in size and athleticism and just talent overall on the roster should take over. So long as we don't shoot ourselves in the foot, I think we're in good shape. Anyway, this has been a lot of fun previewing this. Very curious to see how it plays out in this one game. And then again, if both teams lose, they still have another, but very curious to see how this plays out. So anyway, until then, everybody enjoy the game. You've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.